I'm going to call upon your prior understanding and your prior familiarity with Matthew chapter 25, which is the parable that he gave to his disciples. And this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. And it was only a day or two before he proposed to his bride. And in times past, I've spoken to you about the meaning of that cup and the words that were spoken when he presented that cup to his disciples at his last earthly Passover, and where he said he would not drink of that cup until he drank it anew with them in the kingdom. Our usual take on this passage, which discusses the 10 virgins, 5 wise and 5 foolish, our usual take on it is that it's a matter of saved versus lost. And to some degree, that's logical. But I want to pose to you something today that may be a little different than the way you've regarded this passage in the past, because I think there is more in that story than meets the casual eye. Now remember, who he's talking to. He's not talking to the world at large. This was a private gathering with his disciples. It is not a parable that he needed to explain like he did the others that he gave to the general public. You'll recall many, many places where he would speak a parable in a sermon, and then his disciples would ask him privately the fuller meaning of what he was talking about. There's a series of these parables that are all blocked together and I think present a consistent message. And if we look at that series of parables in a broader context, I think we can see that there's more here than we might have originally thought. For example, in chapter 24, verses 36 to 51, he presents the stage for the point that he is going to be making in these next 3 parables. And that point is, I'll make a long story short, that point is readiness. That's the concluding half of chapter 24. Our readiness is important. And then in chapter 25, he presents to them the parable of the 10 virgins. And then in chapter 25, verses 14 to 30, he presents to them the parable of the talents. And in chapter 25, verses 31 to 46, he relates to them the parable of all nations, or what some people refer to as the sheep from the goats. You may recall we talked about this parable, or this event that he describes, the sheep from the goats, as being the last resurrection. But in these messages, we can see that there is a time factor that's built in. With the 10 virgins, we can see that there's a moment in time when it is too late for something. And then in the parable of the talents, we can see that there is a gain expectation. When God gives a talent to someone, he expects to get that talent back with gain. It's not a small matter. When we're given a talent, it's not for the purpose of sitting on it and doing nothing. In that also, there is a sense of a time element in the fact that we don't live forever. If we're going to use our talent, we better plan on using it while we're alive. So there's a time element, and there's an expectation. And then when it blends into the all nations parable, we see something greater, where he divides the sheep from the goats. And in that one, we can see that there is a response expectation. at that point in time, no one will have an excuse. And that's why one of the reasons why I identify this particular resurrection as referring to the last, because this is the sentencing. This is where the sheep are separated from the goats. At this point in time, it's possible to know who is which. Whereas before conversion, we can't always know that. Matthew 25 presents a wedding scenario that has long been understood in the context of just people being saved or lost. I feel that there's more to this message than meets the casual eye. What real point was Jesus making? Now, I ran this subject by Dell because it is a little different, and if you feel you need to disagree, that's fine. I don't mind that. But I would like you to at least think about it, because there's a message in here that I think is important to us, both from the consideration of motivation and in realizing that there is another day of salvation beyond this one. Now, there's a difference between those 2 days of salvation, and we've talked about that in the past also. I'm going to hopefully rely on your prior understanding of that subject. But this is not the only day of salvation, something we've long understood in the church. But I think this parable brings out something in that we would be wise to follow. Matthew 25, I don't know if I need to read all of this, but let me just breeze through the parts of it. The kingdom of heaven shall be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. They all took their lamps. They all went forth to meet the bridegroom. They knew what they were doing. This isn't talking about the general public. They wouldn't have known to do that. For them to go at the right time tells us that these were people who were basically called into the truth and who understood it. And they had lamps. Now, we understand that the oil in their lamps is representative of God's Spirit. But as Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary brings out, there's more to it than that. It's not just oil, but a burning light. That's the purpose of having the oil. They had lamps. They didn't just come with vials of oil. That would say that they had God's Spirit. The important thing is that those lamps had to be burning with or from that oil. And that sort of ties into the previous subject that I talked about grace being our means of performance, not just our forgiveness of sins. So they had this oil, and they had their lamps burning. Now, all 10 came together. All 10 came, basically, with the same accoutrements, with one exception. 5 of them thought ahead. 5 of them were aware of the possibilities that there might be some time go by. And the contents, the oil that their little lamps could hold, may not have lasted for enough time. And that was the difference between these two. All 10 slept. They weren't faulted for that. What they were faulted for was not having enough oil in their lamps. Now, we know they had oil in their lamps when they came because their lamps were burning. In verse 7, then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. You don't trim a lamp that's not been burning. If any of you ever dealt with oil lamps, and we used to have a camp where we did, we had oil lamps. And if you don't trim your wick properly, it makes smoke, and the flame doesn't burn brightly. And it clogs up, it smokes up the inside of the globe. So it's important to have the wicks trimmed properly. But, of course, it's important to have oil as well. If your oil gets too low, your wick burns away. And this is a problem area also. In verse 8, and it says, the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are, and the King James says, gone out. But if you notice, if you have a marginal reference, it says, our lamps are going out. And that's the better sense of this. And then in verse 9, we can see a very important aspect of this, that the oil and what it represents cannot be transferred from one person to another. Each person has to obtain their own supply. Another important lesson that's in here. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go rather unto them that sell and buy for yourselves, which they did. And they came back. And when they came back, they found the door was closed to them. They didn't knock on the door and say, we couldn't find any oil, but let us in anyway. The presumption is that they did obtain more oil, but they didn't obtain it in time. You see, there is a time cutoff. Just like Jesus said at his last Passover, I will not drink of this cup, of this fruit of the vine, until I drink it anew with you in the kingdom. He was telling them that there is a time limit. That gap between the time that they drank of the cup and the time that he would in the kingdom is the period of opportunity to become a part of the bride of Christ. When he returns, when he sits down with his disciples, when he takes the cup and drinks of it himself, he basically seals the opportunity. He closes the opportunity of who can be a part of the bride. That's the difference here. That there is a time limit. That it does not go on forever. And once that event happens, it is not possible to become a part of the bride from that moment on. So then what of the other five? Now apparently they obtained more oil. They came back with oil, but not in time. Does that say then that they're lost? If they were lost, how would they get oil? Where would they get oil from? If we go by what it pictures, where does one get God's Spirit but from God? Now that brings us to another curiosity, because in the message of turning them away, let's read it in verse 11. Afterward came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said unto them, verily I say unto you, I know you not, which is a strange thing to say to these people. If they had his Spirit prior to the call, and they obtained his Spirit after they were told to go get more, how can he say, I don't know you? Some of us tend to associate this statement with the place where Jesus spoke to the religious, but who weren't converted, where he says, depart from me, you whose works are iniquity. This isn't that same sense. He's saying, I don't know you, to people that he would have to have known, to have them come to the wedding, to have had God's Spirit to some degree to begin with, but not enough for the time, and who went and got more, how can he say, I don't know you? Personally, I feel that we need to understand the word know in a conjugal sense, not in a cognitive sense, if you can follow that. He's saying, I don't reproduce children with you. But he's saying, of the other five, the first five, the wise five, he's saying, I do. The bride of Christ, together with Christ, will be the ones who generate the family of God in the millennial and post-millennial age. They're not barred from salvation, per se. Why would he have given them this pure spirit if he's going to throw them in the lake of fire? I don't believe that's the point. The point of this story is that there is a point in time beyond which it's not possible to become a part of the bride of Christ. But salvation, the period of opportunity for salvation, goes into its next phase. And these are the progeny, these are the children of Christ and his bride, who are converted after Christ returns through the end of the millennial age and the post-millennial age, what we recognize as the second resurrection period, the second resurrection occurring after the 1,000 years are finished. Do you see the difference? Now, this still has relevance to us because it's important that we be ready to be a part of the bride. There is a price to pay for someone who is not. And that price is they're going to live out their lives after Christ returns. They're going to sleep through the millennial age after their normal lives are over. And they are going to come up with the sheep and the goats. If Christ resurrected all of his saints that there will ever be at his second coming, then where do you get those sheep that come up later? When he deals with, notice it says, all nations. You see the message in this? That like with the parable of the talents, he expects gain. But with the parable of the 10 virgins, he expects us to understand that there is a time limit to this opportunity. It is the highest calling to be a part of the bride of Christ, and it's not something that we should let go. We need to press for that inclusion. We need to be ready for it. We need to have and be living in God's Spirit. And that, I believe, is the message that we read here regarding these other 5 virgins, that they're not necessarily barred from salvation eventually, but they will not enjoy the relationship of being part of the engendering family of God that produces children for the family of God from that point forward. If you want to consider this in greater detail, I did bring some of this in article form. The article probably does a lot better of the job than I just did. But it's worthy of thought at least. And I think it's comforting to know that there is a subliminal message in here, that the opportunity for salvation does not close at Christ's return. It's just the position that is offered to us after that point in time is not as high, is not as great, is not as high a calling as this present day. So something to think about. Hopefully it's a message of hope. I think it is. To know that God is going to continue producing for his family long after Christ's return.